This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. Hey, I just want to remind you, you can always call with questions or comments about shows or ideas for guests. We have a 24-hour voicemail line at 323-SEX-8266. 323-SEX-8266. To say that I'm excited about this next guest is an understatement. It has taken a really long time to get them on the show, and I'm so excited that it finally happened. Let me tell you about them. Yin Q is a Chinese-American queer BDSM practitioner, educator, and writer-producer of Mercy Mistress, and mother to two domineering daughters. Yin's activism is focused on destigmatizing sex work and uplifting the most marginalized and vulnerable. Yin Q's writing can be found in Bust, Afro-Asia, Apogee Journal, Queer Magic, A Women's Thing, and the upcoming We Too anthology by the Feminist Press. They are particularly interested in the transformative powers of BDSM and eating dim sum. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Yin.
Hi, thank you so much, Tristan.
So you are a first-generation Chinese-American, and I think at least sort of stereotypically, Chinese parents have certain expectations of their kids. So I'm wondering how you found yourself on this path to BDSM, not just being as a part of your life, but being a part of your profession.
Sure. So, yeah, coming from a very conservative upbringing, still, I think some of the emphasis, though, was still on creative arts and a lot of reading. So I feel like a lot of BDSM came to me through fairy tales in the very, very beginning, like this ritualized ideas of being martyred for pain, really learning how to conduct power rituals. I think you can see that in almost every fairy tale. So I was, you know, so through academics even, there are these supplements that are given that really enhance BDSM and really kind of steer my sexuality towards power play and sadomasochism. But I did go through, you know, all of the rigorous academic education, study Latin, played classical music for many, many years. And then before diving into personal experiences with BDSM, I did a lot of reading about it in college before I really felt comfortable to pursue it as a career. After I did graduate from Barnard in New York City, I moved out to the San Francisco Bay Area to then finally kind of get my hands into the flesh of all of it.
And how long have you been working in BDSM?
For close to 25 years now.
Wow. Wow. So the series that you have written and created is called Mercy Mistress. It's based on your own memoir. Tell me how that came about, how you decided, okay, I want to bring this to the screen.
Sure. I think I was really quite intimidated to write a screenplay for a very long time. However, I was approached by a TV producer who was curious about it, who was a friend from the community. And I had been writing memoir for quite a long time and personal essay for quite a long time, and I've gotten stuck sort of in that I narrative. So finally I sat down, downloaded the final draft application to my computer, and just started plugging away, and I found it really freeing to, first of all, be able to shift from the I narrative of a memoir where I really felt like I had to stick to facts, and, you know, even though it's creative nonfiction, I really felt like I had to stick to my own story. But then to be able to open up and tell the stories through the eyes and lenses of the people that I had met, you know, the clients, and just the other wonderful, fabulous perverts of the kink community, I found it so freeing to be able to then create something. And then at that next level of when we finally went into production, of handing it over to actors and actresses and the director and, you know, the DP to create like a whole other story that is beyond just being my own. And that felt really good. I really love that collaboration feeling.
The production quality of this is absolutely lush and gorgeous. The scenes that take place with Mistress Yin are super erotic. They're really hot. They're beautifully shot. And then alongside that, there feels a very authentic depiction of kind of life in New York, along the lines of kind of Master of None, for example. It just feels very lived in and very authentic. The production is just like spectacular and the acting is amazing. And of course, the first thing that I noticed, I couldn't help but notice, is when was the last time I saw two Asian people doing BDSM in an erotic context? Never. And I've watched a tremendous amount of porn and independent film that covers sex and BDSM. But there is so little representation of Asian folks in that space. And as you may know, there's only one straight Asian porn star, and he only worked for a few years. So I'm wondering first why you think it's one of the most underrepresented groups of people in any kind of erotic or sex space.
Well, I think that there is a stigma, as we were somewhat starting to get to with the first question of this, of being an Asian immigrant. You know, our families really have a whole other set of expectations for us. Of course, sexuality itself in many Asian American communities and Asian communities is really not spoken of. And if anything, it's very much with a very conventional, that this is for your marriage and that it's a very heteronormative story to be told. So that said, sexuality is something that's, you know, very hidden, very silenced. And so to break out and come out and sort of claim one's sexuality and claim one's identity within that arena, within as an Asian American, there's so many more stigmas and to fight through, and then also, you know, that inner shame and that inner ideas of what one should be doing with one's life. So coming out, and also even in media, as we know now, after so much work is being done within Hollywood to also bring Asian American representation to the screens. So actually bringing those two things together, sexuality and then also media. It's a rare thing. It's a very few who can actually punch through and get out there and feel like they are being supported by their community, their families. And because family is so important to us, you know, as meant for many people and for many other immigrant communities, but to have that support is also really, it's really important.
I recently had Stravula, Tosca, and the cast of Switch on the show, which is also a web series about professional domination. And well, a few things come to mind. One is that finally, we're getting more authentic representations of BDSM. It's not on Law & Order SVU. There are no mistresses wearing collars. There are no sort of like salacious details and also things that don't make sense, right? About, you know, these like sort of crime scenes. So, but you're still breaking new ground because in many ways, kink has not been represented by actual kinky people, right? There haven't been kinky people in the writer's room or behind the scenes. It's been kind of Hollywood's fears and fantasies about what kink is that get represented.
Yeah, and so, that's true. And I think that's still,
No, go ahead.
I think that's still a problem. I definitely think that's still a problem. I think that's why it's taken this long. It's that's why Mercy Mistress is still a web series on YouTube. I feel like there's so many people who are ready to write authentic stories and ready to create their own stories, but it's just all the gatekeepers that are still so scared of letting us do that
and
funding us to do that.
How has it not been censored from YouTube? YouTube is notoriously prudish, takes down things that have no nudity at all, but porn stars just talking to the camera, they'll take that down. How does it survive on YouTube?
You know, I'm not really sure. We haven't been banned. We've definitely been given the 18 over consent button that goes through, but we haven't had anybody contact us regarding whether, you know, for taking any content down. I think part of it too is like what you said before about the production and how beautifully it's done. I think how mindfully the sensuality is done, the sexuality is portrayed, is really a credit to my, you know, mostly femme and non-binary queer team, and the director Amanda Madden and DP Samantha Painter, how they really created the sexuality, the sensuality, and brought up the details of BDSM that are so important to those of us who live the experience and get excited by the fetish of the feet within stockings, you know, within stockings, the actual sound of stockings being rubbed up against the face. That they were able to really focus on these details that you can't censor, you know. But when we pulled in, especially to do any kind of body shots of the main character, like we weren't focusing on what most people think sexuality is about. Like we're not getting booty shots, which is, you know, and I'm not saying anything's wrong with that either, but we weren't really focusing in on the booty shots or body shots, or in fact, we didn't want to fragment Poppy Lou's body. You know, we wanted to show her as, you know, this character as a full domina. But pulling into the things that are important to us, like the toes within the feet or the Cuban heeled stockings, those kinds of things. How are they going to censor, you know, how are they going to get indicted me to censor toes from the internet? Yeah. I think that might be the one reason why we're able to survive right now.
I remember in one episode, when Mistress Yin takes her shoe off, you hear the pop of the shoe coming off and thinking, okay, no one, and I mean no one, would catch that except someone who really does this work and who does and who has these kinks, like, and who has done this play. Like no one would get that kind of detail. Those are the kind of things that really drive home the authenticity for me as a kinky person watching. I'm like, this is it. This is what it's all about. And people don't get it.
Thank
so I
you.
Love, yeah, I love that
time.
Little detail.
We have such a good time, like in post production in the sound studio, because it was really those details that mattered so much to all of us.
Okay, we got to take our first commercial break. I don't know how that happened.
Sure.
Listen to our fabulous sponsors tell you about themselves, including Pleasure Chest, which makes this show possible. So give them some love. And when we come back, more with Yin Q. Stay with us. Hey everyone, Tristan here. The Pleasure Chest continues falling in lust in November. This month, their Pleasure Ed program of free sex ed classes features Threesomes with Tina Horn, Midori's Dirty Fun Rope Tricks, Advanced Double Penetration, 50 Things to Do with Your Hands, and Edging 101 Erotic Sexual Denial. And forget Black Friday, but do not miss the Pleasure Chest's sexiest sale of the year, which starts Wednesday, November 27th, and runs through Cyber Monday, December 2nd. There'll be 20% off site-wide, plus all Fun Factory products will be 25% off during that time. And that's not all. Enjoy free shipping on all purchases on Cyber Monday, December 2nd. Go to pleasurechest.com to see all the events, take advantage of these super savings, and get your holiday shopping done early. Use promo code Tristan at checkout for a free massage candle with any purchase. That's a great thing to give for Secret Santa or that last-minute holiday hostess gift. You may know me for creating various forms of media centered around sexuality, gender, relationships, feminism, and pop culture. I'm ready to take a big risk and do something completely different, and I hope you might join me. I'm working on a family memoir focused on my own coming-of-age story woven in with my father's. It's a story about growing up, multi-generational queer experience and history, love, loss, and the meaning of home. I started it and I hope to have it completed by the end of 2019. This isn't just a new book, though. It is way outside my comfort zone, and I've been wanting to write it for years. But I've been kind of terrified to share this personal story with the public. I mean, I'm comfortable telling you about my love of butt plugs, but it feels way scarier to tell you about my family, my innermost thoughts, my mental health, and one of the most significant events in my life, the death of my father. If you want to support me and my writing, you can go to patreon.com/TristanTaramino. Thanks.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. My guest today is Yin Q, a Chinese-American queer BDSM practitioner and educator, and the writer and producer of Mercy Mistress, a fantastic web series about BDSM that you can actually see on YouTube, which we talked about before the break. It's kind of amazing that it's on YouTube. So you talked about the crew of the show, and why was it important for you to have women and non-binary folks behind the scenes?
Because for me, this is based on my memoir, so even though I'm telling the story also through other perspectives with clients and other people within the community, it was really important to me that I have the female gaze up front and present. So we really wanted to align with who is behind the camera with who is in front of the camera so that the set itself could feel like a true community. Because as we know, the camera can be also an instrument to basically reduce identity. So it was really important to me that I work with people whom I felt were going to treat the material with the respect and the love that I have for the story. And for all the identities within the stories.
It occurs to me that part of the allure of seeing a professional dom is the kind of mysteriousness of the dom and mm-hmm. not knowing what's mm-hmm. going to happen. And so I'm wondering if some of your colleagues and peers thought, oh no, you're giving away our secrets. I mean, what has the community response in general been like?
Oh, wow. I think that I've just had an overwhelming positive response to the dom community, because even though, you know, for the client, there is that mystere, there's so much relief to actually also see our work on screen be validated as real work. You know, I think that there's so much frustration from DOMs who feel that most the general public believe that they're, you know, popping bonbons and just answering calls and going in for a 2-hour session and then just being, you know, completely ready to go on to the next session in their heels and whatnot. So to treat the work as real work, showing the preparation, showing even like the cleanup and those are things that are really important. I feel like the community has given back so much in terms of how much love they've been sending our way, from, you know, writing articles about it, about Mercy Mistress, to, I don't know, college students writing dissertations on it. It's been really wonderful.
I do like that the transitions in and out of the scenes where we essentially get to see that just like any break between shifts, you know, people have to do the daily kind of boring, mundane tasks of life, like call their mother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's also, though, a particular scene in episode 5 where the lead character, Mistress Yin, masturbates directly after having a session with one of her clients. And I'm wondering, that seems like that would be quite taboo, right, to show. And I'm wondering, like, what your feelings are about kind of blurring those lines and saying, actually, I do like my work, and sometimes I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had a few people ask me, and even some DOMs who have asked me about that scene. And it's true to life. You know, there were scenes that would turn me on so much, but I was not going to overstep those boundaries in doing those things with my clients. There have been times I've written emails that have turned me on so much that I'll take my pleasure break for myself. And I think actually to show a DOM who's really enjoying their work but still treating it as business and having those boundaries that, you know, as you'll see in hopefully in future episodes or even within this one, there are boundaries that are sloppy. That's just the nature of being a human in this type of industry. It was just a true portrayal for me.
And how did you get connected with Margaret Cho, and where did she come in on the process?
Sure. Margaret came in through another producer, Evan Shapiro, and she basically, we asked her to be executive producer to help us push this forward, and she, you know, was just so wonderful and just so embracing of the story, and once we met, it was just a really perfect fit. I mean, of course, I've been a fangirl, like, since college of her work, as well as her messages out there and coming out as kinky, as queer, and then also coming out as a sex worker, and then also all of the traumas that she has faced and made very public. It felt very much in line with what I'm doing with Mercy Mistress, because I feel like I'm coming out a lot, and you know, and I'm not a media person. I'd never wanted to be actually in front of the camera. I've, you know, even though I have been for many interviews, I've always wanted to be the person who's doing the writing from the back. So it was really a perfect fit of finding someone who could champion the work for us, or rather, along with us.
So you're not a media person, which I assume means you never considered that you may play the part of yourself in this. Is that right?
Right.
And what was it like to watch someone play someone very close to or based on you?
It was really wonderful, because from the very beginning of working with Papi Liu, I realized too that there was that this person, this character is now no long, is like birthed from me. You know, they're my daughter rather than actually being me. There are definitely elements that we worked on a lot of in terms of talking about background, talking about violence and trauma and how one holds that within their body, and then also how one enjoys sadism as, you know, as a very deep sadomasochist. So that we did a lot of working with in terms of character work. However, it was really, again, like I said before, it was really freeing to know that this is not going to be just a replica of me. This is definitely updated person. You know, it's set in the present day. This Mistress Yin uses an iPad to keep track of all her clients rather than a file, a Rolodex file. this Mistress Yin has, does texting quickly, has a lot more access to New York City queer culture that has, exploded much more than I had pre-internet.
Just 2 weeks ago, June 2nd, was International Sex Worker Day. There were a lot of actions and celebrations around the country. What did you do to commemorate that day?
Yeah, I also gathered with community at Blue Stockings in New York City. It's a bookstore that is a feminist and very inclusive bookstore that read from Decrim New York, had gathered several speakers from Red Canary, from other organizations within New York City, to bring together all us wonderful whores together, to be able to be in a room together and learn how to do wheat pasting of posters around the city.
Oh, that's great. I love that wheat pasting hasn't gone out of fashion. I really love that. As a child of the 90s and activism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, you talked about Red Canary. I do want to talk more about this. We're going to take a break. And coming up, we're going to hear about the organization Red Canary and Yin's current project that has to do with them, along with a whole bunch else about the leather and kink community in New York City and BDSM. So let's take a break. And when we come back, more with Yin Q. Stay with us. Hey everyone, it's Tristan, and it's time to listen up because we're going to talk about one of my very favorite subjects, porn. We all know that it's not hard to find porn on the internet, but finding porn that you like, that's a different story. Sometimes you can spend more time looking for a scene that you like than you actually spend watching it. And it can feel like a never-ending black hole of cliches, bad scripts, and plastic leather sofas. If you want to try something new with relatable storylines, realistic situations of very hot sex, and cinematic quality, then you need to check out the new LustCinema.com. Founded by Erica Lust, Lust Cinema is her new U.S. porn studio for lovers of cinema and sex. On Lust Cinema, you'll find original series and feature films shot by Erica herself and other U.S.-based female directors, as well as a huge catalog of content from other adult filmmakers. If you already know Erica Lust, then you know that she makes beautiful cinematic porn on X Confessions. So expect nothing less on her new Lust Cinema. You'll experience the whole feeling of sex, the passion and the pleasure. And on Lust Cinema, everyone's pleasure is equally important. Hear, hear to that. Erica wants Sex Out Loud listeners to experience her world of lust, so she's giving you a one-month membership for just $5. Visit www.lustcinema.com/Tristan to get your $5 month and start streaming now. That's lustcinema.com/Tristan. Lust Cinema. Great porn, better sex.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking with Chinese American queer BDSM practitioner and educator Yin Q, who is also the writer and producer of a web series called Mercy Mistress, which you can watch now for free on YouTube. Before the break, you talked about Red Canary, which I want to get into. But why for you is it so important that sex work be stigmatized, destigmatized?
Right. Well, I feel like, as we've seen with gay marriage and the LGBT community coming out for over the past few decades, that that really society has to learn about us first. And that's through media, you know, through media as well as being able to, so that we can feel comfortable coming out of the closet to our neighbors. It really is, took the show, you know, shows like Will and Grace and like some really silly queer shows to be out there first, so that society could slowly accept them, because really culture has to change before policy will change, is what we've seen historically. So I believe the same thing with sex culture.
And are you in favor of decriminalization of sex work?
I am. I'm in favor of full decriminalization.
Do you think we're headed there and that we will see that in our lifetime?
You know, I am starting to. And I have to say, when I first started producing and doing gatherings with legal seminars for sex workers, it was mostly harm reduction and bringing people together for Know Your Rights on how to deal with police raids and how to advertise them, not to be careful, and how to deal with, you know, clients who might be unruly and rather than calling the police. So there was so much that was geared towards just harm reduction, and it did not occur to me at the time, and I'm talking like 15 years ago to 10 years ago, that it didn't occur to me that this would actually finally be pushed through. It was sort of a lovely fantasy, you know. Once Amnesty International wrote their bill on decriminalization worldwide for sex workers, my heart just kind of skipped. And then now seeing politicians take up our fight with us has been, it's just been phenomenal that I am starting to actually have that hope that I will see this within my lifetime. And I don't know if I would have said that even 5 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like there's a lot more dialogue. There's a lot more public activism, and it seems like, you know, possibly during the next presidential election, people will have to answer about their feelings about this. You know, candidates will have to say what their policy would be. And the fact that it's even, you know, in the lineup is amazing.
Right. I agree.
So your latest project is a short documentary, Working with Red Canary, which is a nonprofit grassroots organization that is focused on advocating for the safety and labor rights of Chinese immigrant massage parlor workers. How did that come about?
Okay. So in 2017, there was a really tragic death of Yang Song, who was a Chinese immigrant massage parlor worker who fell to her death during a police raid. Previous to that raid and her death, she had been sexually assaulted by someone who claimed to be a police officer. She had been harassed several times by police officers almost on a daily basis. And then she had also been asked by police to become an informant and was really being pressured to become an informant for them. And she continuously denied to do that. After her death, many sex work activists came together in Flushing, Queens to speak out for the rights and the protection of the massage parlor workers who work in Flushing on a strip of 40th Street in Flushing. And it's been a challenging work to do so, because so many immigrants are scared of deportation. Many massage parlor workers don't identify as sex workers, even if it's part of their offerings within massage work. And then there's so many more layers to the labor rights that, you know, that affect massage workers as opposed to other areas of sex work. But Red Canary has been doing a phenomenal job. It's a very small and underfunded and not very well-known organization that is just now really starting to gain acknowledgement. And so I am putting together a documentary along with filmographer Grace Knoll. And it's really to give Red Canary a voice in this struggle for decrim.
I would imagine that there are all these layers, because if there's a police raid on any sort of gathering of sex workers, the danger is, of course, police abuse and potential criminal charges and jail time. But for these folks, there's this added layer of ICE coming in and right. and questioning their immigration status and deporting them. And, you know, all you have to do is look at the news to know how marginalized folks are treated under ICE protection or care, they would call it. But when people are being detained by ICE these days, it's a risk to their lives.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly traumatic. And then there's so many, I mean, and the shame that it brings to the people in their community is also one of trauma, because community, as we've talked about, is so important, just, you know, in immigrant communities. They're not from their, you know, they're not in their countries. They're not many times with their families already, but then to be taken away then from the people who they've been living with, as sisters in the same community, is another, you know, isolating experience. There's also another layer that if they are fined to be using massage licenses, under the guise of sex work, that's actually a felony, and they can be charged at a higher degree than other sex workers would be charged.
Oh, that, wow. That, okay, so, and then they get their license stripped from them, I assume. So even
mm-hmm.
if...
Right.
Right, so then they
and could... And then their immigration status is even more,
in jeopardy.
Right.
So one of the things that has been a huge struggle right now is that legal sex work along with consensual sex work has been conflated with human trafficking. This is one of the big mm-hmm. issues, that there's been a lot of money put into human trafficking. There's a lot of panic about human trafficking. Everyone's talking about human trafficking. And I wonder if you might talk, though, about how, like, are any of these folks in precarious positions because of their immigration status? How do I know when I go to a massage parlor that everyone is there freely and of their own will?
I think that's a really difficult assessment to make from being an outsider or being a client who goes in, because there's such a huge cultural difference, too. So when we see Asian immigrants living and working in the same place where there's a kitchen and there's bedrooms and the massage, you know, parlor itself is a bunk area, we instantly think, oh, they must be captive. You know, we never see them come out of the building. However, this is how a lot of Asian immigrants, this is how they work, and this is how they live, and this is how they come over to our country. This is part of their culture, so that even other areas of labor, such as restaurant work, such as nail salon parlors, there are many places where the people work in one area. They might be bused to another areas of labor. However, that they really stay within their own community. It's very tight, and if they, you know, if they happen to live and work in the same place, they're not necessarily there because of trafficking or captive, exploitative reasons. Now, that said, there are so many gray shades, you know, gray areas of exploitation. However, it's very hard for us as outsiders, and I'm saying myself in general because I am an Asian American and I have some, you know, I do not come from the same community. It's very hard for us to assess those things until we're able to actually have that communication of asking how they're doing and actually providing protection and services and resources so that these communities feel safe enough to assess their own condition, to be able to find their own protection, as well as to understand that, okay, if they don't feel safe within where their labor is, then there are other options. So I think that it's about that idea of giving options and showing clearly that there are other options rather than going in and rating them and saying that they are instantly victimized as well as demonized.
Right. I mean, and I feel like the default is trafficking, right? Instead of the default being, let's see what's going on here, we don't know. Mm-hmm. The default is trafficking, because that's all we hear about in the news. And, you know, there's all these trainings about how to spot a trafficked person for law enforcement, for people who work in social services, for people who work in healthcare, for the state. And so I feel like that's kind of the default space. And people mm-hmm. aren't actually given a voice to say, this is what I'm doing.
Right. As well as, you know, I think that there's this ideology that if somebody's being trafficked, they need to be rescued rather than just supplied with more resources. And this is, you know, so that what does rescue mean to the police agency, you know, to law enforcement? Rescue actually means taking them out and in many ways violently putting them into a situation that is much worse and mm-hmm. much more isolating and much, you know, much more traumatic. There are so many people who are victims of human trafficking who speak on this really eloquently about how they are also for decriminalization because they would have rather been given options rather than having somebody come in and rescue them.
Okay, we're going to take another commercial break, everyone. When we come back, we're going to hear about Yin's upcoming projects. Yes, there's more. They are a slacker and they do nothing. No, there's this long list of things that Yin has in the works, and we've got to talk about them. So let's take a break. When we come back, more with Yin Q. Hey everyone, Tristan here. The Pleasure Chest continues falling in lust in November. This month, their Pleasure Ed program of free sex ed classes features threesomes with Tina Horn, Midori's Dirty Fun Rope Tricks, Advanced Double Penetration, 50 Things to Do with Your Hands, and Edging 101 Erotic Sexual Denial. And forget Black Friday, but do not miss the Pleasure Chest's sexiest sale of the year, which starts Wednesday, November 27th, and runs through Cyber Monday, December 2nd. There'll be 20% off site-wide, plus all Fun Factory products will be 25% off during that time. And that's not all. Enjoy free shipping on all purchases on Cyber Monday, December 2nd. Go to pleasurechest.com to see all the events, take advantage of these super savings, and get your holiday shopping done early. Use promo code Tristan at checkout for a free massage candle with any purchase. That's a great thing to give for Secret Santa or that last-minute holiday hostess gift.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Hey, if you've listened before, you know that the Pleasure Chest is my amazing top sponsor. And if you live near LA, New York, or Chicago, you can check out their free classes in their Pleasure Ed program. All the classes are free. They're open to everyone, all genders, all sexual orientations. Seating is on a first-come, first-served basis, though. Let me tell you what's coming up. In New York City, June 19th, Squirt Shop, G and P Spot play. In Chicago, June 16th, Tips, Tricks, and Sips, Strap-On Sex for Queers. June 19th in Chicago, Trans Sex Basics. In LA, June 16th, a class on painful sex. We do not have enough discussions about this, about people who experience pain during intercourse and penetration. So I'm so glad that they're having that class. Also in LA, June 19th, Negotiation to Impact, Creating Meaningful Dominant Submissive Dynamics, Part 1. This is part 1 of 2. And they held this last year, and it was absolutely phenomenal. So any of you interested in kink or BDSM, even if you're a beginner, I highly recommend that class. And then June 21st is a happy hour where B-Vibe will launch their vibrating snug plugs. You know I love a B-Vibe butt plug, so get there. We are talking today with Yin Q about their life and about their web series, Mercy Mistress. One of the things that I was really interested in, you brought it up in the first segment, and it's also in your bio, which is that you do a lot of workshops, and you also say that you offer private BDSM ritual work in New York City. Now, usually folks will say things like, I have sessions with clients, but I'm feeling like you're very deliberate in the use of the word ritual, and I would like you to talk more about that.
Sure. So, yes, people are always asking what's the difference between a dominatrix session and ritual work session, and there's very little difference except that I take away the dominant submission part of it, that I ask people if they would like to create a ritual, and they must create it with me, so that they are actually choreographing their, you know, part of that, the ritual with me, and that I am the person who can facilitate holding, you know, the flogging, the whipping, the rope bondage, so that people can come experience their kink for themselves rather than for a connection that is done through a power dynamic that most dominatrixes create, so that when they feel that they are in bondage, they're not going to be pushed or prodded to do anything that they haven't already set up for themselves. And in that way, then I also really give them the space to just let them feel their bodies and not concentrate on me at all.
This is a fascinating approach to be kind of more collaborative with the person who essentially is still, let's call them the bottom, if not submissive, right?
Right. Right.
That they get to collaborate more rather than this kind of top-down thing, which is, I'm going to come to you and you're going to do whatever you want. I mean, you read my list of yes, no, and maybe, but you're going to, quote, mm-hmm. do whatever you want, as in like run the show, which is a typical DS scene.
Right. Right, and it's something that I had also experienced as a bottom going to professional dominatrixes, because what it did for me was it helped me then go in and ask to create a scene that helped me push through trauma, especially. And it was a way for me to not worry about if I was pleasing the dominant, or if, you know, and also not worry about feeling like I need to eroticize the session. So as a bottom, for me, it was really important to be able to just do it as a very therapy style work, therapeutic work of going in and having a mind body cathartic experience, that was deeply meaningful. And it was meaningful. And I was, you know, always, felt, you know, that I was honoring the person who I was asking to taught me, but I didn't feel this need to submit to them per se.
Yeah, so you're more of the sort of guide. I mean, I would say shaman,
right.
But it's problematic for white people to use that term, I think. So let's mm-hmm. say guide. You're the guide through it, and it isn't, and there is no sort of pressure to be a certain way for the bottom, which I think bottoms often feel that pressure that they want to please and they want to do well and they want to get through it. And they don't often kind mm-hmm. of check in with themselves and say, okay, wait, am I in this? Am I fully present in my body? What's going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like that also helps me as a top to really watch whether they are doing, you know, certain types of BDSM activity to see that they're actually doing a trauma mastery rather than a trauma reenactment.
Right.
Whereas when you're in the DS space or when you're acting as a dominant, it's a little bit harder to tell because you are also trying to push that person to the edge and you're trying to blow their mind and you're trying to, you know, really create something that is very powerful but also really the dynamics cause for maybe that communication not to be quite balanced.
And it's a tricky proposition. It makes me think there's a lot of talk now about trauma within healthcare circles, therapists, psychologists. And I always think, you know, pro-doms were the OG trauma-informed therapists.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Because people often come to this not just for fantasy or fetish or to get off, but often to work through very deep issues. And they come out the other side a different person.
Right. And even when it sounds like a light erotic experience that someone is just wants to reenact or to create or a fantasy, it is still the dominatrix is still doing so much active listening of really taking that, you know, taking the story that has been given to them and then, yeah, curating and choreographing a scene. I mean, there's so much emotional work that is being done as well as mixed with, you know, heavy physical labor. Mm-hmm. getting those leathers and fetters and everything locked on and, you know, it's a lot.
So you are the founder and producer of Kink Out, which is a New York City leather community event. You also have some other things going on. Tell me what's coming up for you and where people might see you next.
Sure. So Kink Out is an event that started about 2 years ago and has grown into this really wonderful, inclusive event that brings it together, intersectional kink identities. I have two other producers now that I work with closely, Katie Diamond, who is a tattoo artist and also with International Miss Leather in 2012, I believe, and Bridget Conway Taylor, who's also a Butch Leather Dyke, who is, you know, a production manager. And we are putting together some really great events for the future, one of them being a panel at the Leslie Lohman Museum, which will be in conjunction with an art exhibition put together by Alexis Heller called On Our Back. It's a queer sex worker artist and activism exhibition. And the panel that the Kink Out production is bringing together will be of queer, kinky sex workers speaking sort of about the horarchy, where our place is in within the sex industry, but then also all the activism that really comes from the kink queer community.
Fantastic. When is that?
So that panel is going to be November 19th, again, at the Leslie Lohman Museum.
Okay, and if you want to find out more about my guest and the series, you can go to the website mercymistress.com. You can find Yin on Twitter at yinq13, which is also their Instagram handle. Some more folks on Instagram, the series at Mercy Mistress and at Kink Out Events. You should probably follow at Kink Out Events to find out what's going on. And also Mercy Mistress is on Facebook and YouTube, where you can see it. So I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Karen Dana, executive producer, Raymond Johnson, senior producer, Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, my announcer, Josh on the board today. Thank you so much for being on the show, Yin. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my honor and pleasure. Thank you.
Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. Until then, you can catch me on all social media platforms at Tristan Taramino and check out my Patreon, patreon.com/TristanTaramino.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.